It's a funny thing that happens when you stay in your home pretty much nonstop for a year and a half. You start looking at your home differently. Whether people call that home an apartment, a single-family house, a bedroom in someone else's house, or mom's couch, Michiganders with the means are looking for a change right now. And if you take even a passing interest in real estate markets, you know that this moment makes that an incredibly hard thing to do. Potential buyers must expect to pay above asking price in many Michigan markets if they can even make a competitive offer. What is going on? Mark Norman researches affordable housing and community development. He's an associate professor at the University of Michigan's Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning. He's also a member of the Federal Reserve Board's Community Advisory Council. Mark Norman, welcome to Stateside.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
The pandemic saw a large number of people house hunting, but I understand that it's not just demand that's driving the market right now in such crazy directions. Can you lay out for us some of the other factors at play here, making it so hard to buy a single-family home or a condo?
Well, frankly, we have to start probably in 2007 and 2008, which seems strange because we've been talking so much about the pandemic. But we actually still have the hangover from the financial crisis, which is collapsing demand and collapsing prices really put a gap in the amount of housing construction that was happening. And as the economy came back, that housing construction just didn't come back in the same way. You add that to the pandemic, and all of a sudden, people are looking for more space, people are looking to move for a variety of reasons, and you just have a supply and demand problem that was a little bit hidden as we went through our recovery.
What can you tell us about the state of Michigan's housing stock generally?
I mean, it really depends on where you are. But what's interesting is we had, you know, what we call strong markets and weak markets. And now pretty much every place is a strong market. Interest rates are lower than they've ever been. When people can refinance or get a new mortgage for less than 3% interest, that just means that the cost of housing has actually come down. And when you pair that with high demand, it means that the prices are going to go up. And that's really what we're seeing here.
I once heard the factors affecting the housing market expressed as five L's: lending, land, lumber, which I understand is also a problem right now, labor, that is the people who work building houses, and laws. Which one do you think is holding a strongest influence right now?
I'm an urban planner, and I work in affordable housing, so I'm going to go with laws. And I say that for a couple of reasons. One is that we make it pretty hard to build the kinds of housing that people can afford. There are cities in Michigan that have minimum lot sizes and minimum house sizes. So there's some communities in Michigan that say you can't build a house less than 1,200 square feet, right? So if construction costs are $100 a square foot, no matter what you do, a house is never going to be less than $120,000. If it was 600 square feet, or if it was based on what you actually need, then you might be seeing $60,000 or $70,000 small houses. In addition, all of these debates, right, around density mean that what gets built is the easiest thing, which is suburban single families on green fields, typically former farmland, because that's the easiest thing to build. Building in our cities is very hard.
Where would you say are Michigan's hottest markets right now? Or maybe the more correct term would be the most difficult to buy into.
You know, it's strange. I talk to people from all over the state, and actually, it's very hard to find housing right now in Detroit. Not necessarily because it's a hot market, but one of the things that happens in Detroit is there aren't enough move-in-ready homes. As you know, the land bank and the city have quite a few publicly owned parcels and publicly owned parcels with houses on them, but those need rehab. And sometimes the cost of the rehabilitation is higher than the value of the house, and that presents a problem.
Yeah. There are tourism-heavy parts of the state, places like Traverse City or Southwest Michigan, places like New Buffalo, where there are two competing markets. There are people who live there year round, and then there are a bunch of people coming in looking for second homes right now. What do you observe going on in places like that?
I'm glad you brought that up. I've been sort of obsessing about this because there was this statistic put out by Redfin that the demand for single family homes during the pandemic went up about 35%.
35, wow.
Yeah, but wait for it. The demand for second homes went up over 100%, which means that people getting second homes or vacation homes are now competing, right, on the fringes of our cities and in our vacation communities, you know, for what would have been primary residences. And those people are coming with capital. They can pay all cash. They can leverage the cost of their existing house. And those people are using those second homes not as the kind of weekend summer home as much as I'm going to be here 1 month or 3 months, or that might actually become my primary residence.
How long do you expect to see this completely bonkers situation continue?
I actually think there are only a couple of things that are going to change the equation. It would be if interest rates started going up, or if supply started meeting demand. My fear with the supply meeting the demand is we're going to see a lot more sprawl. Because builders see that there's demand for people getting homes, and the easiest, fastest place to build those homes is in our woodlands and our farmlands, where you can build 20, 100 unit subdivisions. So I frankly think we'll build our way out of this problem, but we're probably, because of the pandemic and because of the law, the L, which is law that you talked about, we're going to see a lot more sprawling subdivisions, which have implications for traffic and have implications for climate change.
Right. How do you see this as being different from the last housing boom? Some of us are old enough to remember the roaring 90s and all the crazy things that happened as, you know, a lot of our towns were building up and mortgages were starting, you know, were starting to become available to a lot of people who hadn't had access before. And for some families that worked out, and for other families, there was a devastating crash that followed. Does this situation have any similarities in your mind?
I think in some ways there's similarities, but I think also, or at least my hope, is that we learn from our crises. And so after that, you know, the extreme building in the early 2000s and the crash in 2008 and 2009, there were some safeguards put into place. There were lending standards, no more of these not checking incomes for mortgages. So I think those things are sort of tamped down. So I don't think you would see necessarily a crisis like 2008, but I do think the consequences of this is people are actually looking at houses to live in, not necessarily to flip. So I think you won't see the kinds of crashes you saw, but I do think as supply increases, demand will go down and we'll just get to ridiculous, not stratospheric, prices and demand.
If families are just buying their first single family home or condo for their own purposes and not as a speculation, do you think that there are risks, even if the circumstances are different?
I mean, I see a couple of risks. One, the notion of drive till you qualify, which is that, right, if sometimes if you go 30 miles further than you want, the prices come down. Mm-hmm. That actually works during a pandemic when we have work flexibility. That has consequences if and when we all go back to the office, in terms of less time with your family, longer commutes, and more expenses. So I do fear that in this race to buy a house right now in this market, that people are not only overpaying, but also making choices that might not work for a kind of back to normal world that I think the economists are predicting we'll get to.
It's interesting, too. Whenever people start moving to different places for housing, I guess the most obvious examples is when they're forced to because of gentrification. They get farther away from the families that they've been friends with. They get farther away from churches. They get farther away from support systems that they know. I don't know if, you know, the exact same forces are in play here, but do you wonder about the societal changes that happen as people start to move farther away in search of housing that they can afford?
I do wonder about that. You know, in some of the statistics I've seen coming out, a lot of people, right, we talk about like all these people moving from California to Texas or from New York to Florida. But the statistics say that a lot of these people are moving within their states, just further out. And so I think part of that is driven by people still wanting ties to their community. They're going to be further from it. But, you know, I'm going to try to be optimistic that maybe they're creating new communities and new structures and ways of socializing in those new places. I don't know what that means for the places they're leaving, though. And I also don't know what that means when so many people are thinking about second homes and, you know, the kinds of ways of living that are more detached, right? Where like I order everything in, right, from Uber Eats, or mm-hmm. I work from home. It's harder to create community in that environment.
Mark, the state legislature is considering a law that would ban local ordinances that put limits on short-term rentals. And this obviously has big implications for places that are very popular with vacationers, Traverse City, you know, various coastal places. But, I mean, I guess also Detroit. What impact do you think laws like that could have if they pass on the already strained housing markets that we know of?
I really think that it goes back to supply and demand. If there's a demand for housing, if there's demand for vacation rentals, if there's a demand for, let's say, you know, extended stay developments, we should let that happen. And one of the reasons why we're constrained is that our laws constrain us, right? And so whether that's minimum unit sizes, whether that's particularly single family neighborhoods, the majority of our cities have neighborhoods that can only ever be single family, right? So some of that variety in those neighborhoods aren't able to flourish. And it really sort of constrains demand across the board, not just, you know, full-time residents, but vacationers and everything else. You see that demand, that pent-up demand working itself out in things like the short-term rental market.
You've been doing your research at what I feel like is a really interesting time. We're sort of coming out of the 20th century understanding of what the federal government has been able to do with HUD and with incentive programs. And at the same time, we're entering some really, you know, a really different way, a different time in terms of how Americans think about the communities that they live in the 21st century. And again, this complete rocket ride of a housing market. Where do you think are the most effective places that policy can have an influence on affordable housing, especially in a market like this?
I mean, I think I also define affordable housing, which is usually what I think of as kind of subsidized, you know, in some way government sponsored housing, versus affordability, which is what is my income in relationship to what I pay for housing. So mm-hmm. I think they're two different things. But I think I would really like us to think differently about how we do it, right? Before it was like subsidizing developers to build housing and keep it at certain rent levels. But what do we actually want to do? Do we want people to build generational wealth? Do we want people to have opportunity? If that's the case, I think the existing housing stock is always going to dwarf what we can build new. So how are the ways we can transform that, right? So take that single family house that might have one elderly couple in it now. We know, right, our population is aging and is growing slower than it was before. So can that house become a duplex or a triplex? Can it have a granny flat or an accessory dwelling unit? I think those are actual ways that the market can provide affordability.
Mark Norman is an associate professor at the U of M's Taubman College of Architecture and Urban Planning. He also sits on the Federal Reserve Board's Community Advisory Council. Mark, it's been a real pleasure talking to you. Thanks for sharing your thoughts.
Yeah, thank you.